Well, there's been quite a few bits and pieces in the news. I think the paper actually yesterday was the one that was really, well, you know, sometimes you look at the paper and there's almost nothing there. But the one yesterday was so full of bits and pieces that would be of use today. Virtually everything that I'll be saying today is coming from the paper from yesterday. I didn't have to go back further than that. It was it just had so many aspects which I think are pertinent, and the range of things which are pertinent is also fairly large. So the first thing I'd like to draw your attention to is just a little article here that talks about a third of the world's amphibians are on the edge of extinction. Now, it caught my eye. There were some photographs of some various amphibians, some various frogs and salamanders and this kind of thing. But the article here says almost a third of the world's frogs, toads, salamanders and other amphibians are threatened with extinction within 100 years, according to a study. That tens of thousands of years of evolution could be wiped out in a century, but seen by some experts as a warning of impending environmental disaster. Now, the idea that, you know, tens of thousands of years for all the varieties that you're talking about, I feel, you know, looking at it even on an evolutionary scale, I find that very, very hard to believe that is the way that they look at it. So I don't know whether they've got the tens of thousands of years correct here as far as the way they're looking at it. But this is really what the thing that caught my eye is what they're saying. It says amphibians are widely regarded as canaries in the coal mine, or useful indicators of potentially harmful changes in the environment, because their permeable skin is so sensitive. And it goes on, it says amphibians are one of nature's best indicators of overall environmental health, said Russell Mittimer, president of US-based Conservation International. Their catastrophic decline serves as a warning that we are in a period of significant environmental degradation. Now, if you understand what people are talking about regarding evolution, this is why this really, if you like, highlighted itself within the paper, as far as I was concerned. The only way that they can explain evolutionary theory is to say that under intense environmental pressure, biological pressure, there were enormous changes, and you therefore get these, most of the, you know, many of the changes therefore die out, and then one is adapted, wonderfully adapted, and it then has this new species that comes into being. But that's not what they're witnessing. What they're saying is it's going to be extinction. So here they find themselves with, if you like, a test bed for the theory of evolution. And what they're finding is that the animals simply die out, that they, you know, half of all amphibians they anticipate will be erased off the face of the earth. Why? Because of the pressure, the biological pressure, because of the environment, which then puts doubt on the actual theory of evolution that they, you know, those that are scientific. It's not Darwinian evolution. They don't believe in Darwinian evolution. The facts speak against Darwinian evolution. It is this gap theory, this jump theory, where they literally have this intense pressure which then produces all this myriad of different types of life forms. And yes, that's not what's happening. You've got this intense pressure. The amphibians are the forefront of this intense pressure. You don't find all these myriad of life forms suddenly being created, of which most of them die. You're finding that, basically, the death of the amphibian, the actual species of whatever amphibian they're talking about, dies out because of the intense pressure. So the genetics are not being changed. Their actual theory is totally, it's just false. It's just not true. The heavens declare the glory of God, and so does the natural world as well. And as it's said over in Romans 1, where it talks about the how the people suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And this, as I say, there's a whole range of areas that we could deal with. But this was one that I thought was quite interesting, that if a third of the world's amphibians are on the edge of extinction now, and I think they're talking about half of them going, well, basically a third of them, they reckon they will be extinct. And it's because of the environmental pressure. And it then goes ahead and point the theory of evolution that they've got just simply doesn't fit. It just does not fit. The myriad of life forms that we see is an indication of a creator. It is not the indication of an evolutionary process. If we look here in another one on the 15th, you're looking here at an article, a small headline, that says that the Jewish state fears world isolation. And it says an internal report prepared by Israel's foreign ministry paints a gloomy picture for the future of the country's global standing, giving warnings that the coming decade it could suffer the pariah status of South Africa under apartheid. The document written in August and leaked this week suggests that Israel and Europe will find themselves on a collision course that will cause serious economic and diplomatic damage to Israel. It describes a scenario in which an increasingly influential European Union with a widening membership may seek to isolate Israel even if it still has strong backing from America. Now this is quite significant, because it indicates that Europe will actually go down into the Middle East and it will cause the daily sacrifice to cease. There's going to be some kind, something will happen as far as Israel is concerned, which will cause pressure on Europe, which will cause Europe to go down and to take over that area. But the Jewish state, it says, fears world isolation. It says it describes a scenario in which an increasingly influential European Union with a widening membership may seek to isolate Israel even if it still has strong backing from America. In extreme circumstances, this could put Israel on a collision course with the EU, the European Union. The report says such a collision course holds the risk of Israel losing international legitimacy and could lead to isolation in the manner of South Africa. What I'll do, I'll take it out of this thing, there we go. The EU could sharpen its expectation that Israel comply with the international norms and honour the authority of the United Nations and its agencies, an issue that has potential of leading to friction. This article just simply goes on. It says EU officials have recently been highly critical of Israel's construction of a so-called security barrier in the West Bank and its bloody incursions into Gaza. This is at odds with the US backing from the most pro-Israel administration in more than a generation. So there's friction between Israel and also America, and then Europe and America over Israel. It says foreign ministry officials are concerned that the pendulum may swing against Israel as the EU pushes to become a global player at the expense of America, who is Israel's main ally. It then goes on about, the report also raises the prospect of a rise of a new form of anti-Semitism in Europe, which would question Israel's legitimacy as a sovereign Jewish state. In November last year, a response to a European Commission survey, the Israeli foreign minister, ministry described Israel's image as having fallen to an all-time low. It said Israel was seen as an aggressive country with policies dictated by a small group of militant settlers, and there was uproar in Israel when the European Commission found that 59% of Europeans thought Israel was a greater threat to world peace than North Korea, Iran or Afghanistan. Now the only reason why 59% of Europeans thought that is because of what in fact they're being fed from the media, and they're being fed from the politicians over here. The media, the liberal press and the politicians are feeding a very one-sided view of the Middle East, and it is painting Israel and America as well in a black light, and we are getting that progressively more and more. And these kind of problems are all things that we should be looking for, that we should be expecting, and yet when they come, they rancor. You rankle the our view of the world is something which is very different from the way in which Europe is trying to foist on its citizens. And it is going to lead to probably a collision course between the church and also Europe, ultimately. As I say, something is going to happen in that theatre in Israel, which will cause Europe to come down to stop the daily sacrifices. So there's going to be something. And again, we don't know, we've got to be careful and watching. But it's a very, very strong possibility, knowing what it talks about the mark of the beast and so on, that the church is also going to be grouped into the same grouping. Now, If we turn over, just turn over to Jeremiah chapter 6. Jeremiah chapter 6. And it says over in verse 10, it says, "To whom shall I speak and give warning, that they may hear? Behold, their ear is uncircumcised, they can't listen. Behold, the word of the Eternal is unto them a reproach, they have no delight in it. Therefore I am full of the fury of the Eternal, I am weary with holding in. I'll pour it out upon the children abroad, and upon the assembly of the young men together. For even the husband with the wife shall be taken, the age that is full of days. And their houses will be turned to others, the fields of wives together. For I will stretch out my hand upon the inhabitants of the land, says the Eternal. For from the least of them to the greatest of them, every one is given to covetousness, and from the prophet to the priest, every one deals falsely. They've healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. And were they ashamed when they committed abominations? No, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among those that fall, and at the time that I visit them, they will be cast down, says the Eternal." You know, the things that are going on within the Western world, and within Britain and America specifically, that really, that we should be blushing over, and yet we don't. And it's also saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. There's an article, or an advertisement, being put in by the Homeland Security over in America, which I can show here, not to everybody over the internet, but it says, "Flying to America takes about 8 hours. Making your visit safer requires only a few seconds." And it goes in a little bit more then. It says, "The United States has always welcomed visitors from the United Kingdom. We still do, even as we make every effort to make our borders secure, which is why we've introduced U.S. Visit. Simple steps at the airport or cruise line terminal that enhance the security of our citizens and visitors. Visitors have 2 digital finger scans taken by the inkless device. A digital photo is also taken. It requires only seconds, and our visitors' privacy is protected and guaranteed." And for further details, log on to this particular website. But this is all part and parcel of what is increasingly becoming legislation for, quite frankly, a police state. And it's not just within the Europe, it's not just within Britain, it's in America as well. And this type of thing, it's got a smiling family on the advertisement, and it all appears totally innocent. And yet at the same time, we've got another article as well. It says, "Russians fear return of the one-party state." The Russian's lower house of parliament, the Duma, voted yesterday to overturn a ban on the political party leaders becoming ministers, increasing fears that Soviet-style one-party rule could return. So even in Russia, they're looking at this one-party rule. Why? Because of the pressure of terrorism. And terrorism is being used as an excuse to bring in an awful lot of legislation. The arrival of cameras, scanning cameras, which will actually recognize faces within our cities, and you see them all around. You see scanning cameras on virtually every major road over here, which will then scan the number plates, and people can therefore find out where you are. And it is only another stage to go ahead and have the computers with enough power to scan the faces of the people driving to find out who's driving what car. And another article here, it says, "Europol is watching you." It says, "It's our best-selling British vice. We ignore what's happening on our doorstep until almost too late. In 1990, a Finnish town called Tampere, EU interior ministers agreed one of the most ambitious projects ever since the Treaty of Rome. What they proposed was nothing less than the extension of Brussels' jurisdiction into criminal justice, policing, and immigration. Many of these ideas found their way into the Nice Treaty in 2001. Others will come in with the Constitution, but 5 years on, hardly anyone in Britain is even aware of what's being done. Congratulations then to David Davis, the Shadow Home Secretary, for alerting us to the menace of Parliament yesterday. Part of his problem is that the scale and the ambition of the agenda can make an accurate critique sound hysterical. A corpus of EU criminal law, a European police force, an EU prosecuting magistracy, a border gendarmerie, habeas corpus under threat. These things sound so outlandish that people are disinclined to believe them. Surely, they reason, it must be rhetoric. It couldn't possibly work in practice. but in practicality is rarely allowed to stand in the way of European integration. And this is happening. It is happening on an increasing scale, and at the moment it's innocuous. Until we get a major terrorist incident, it'll sit there and just be in the background. But slowly, every single week, you see these things being laid into place. In any case, these are no longer proposals, they are facts. It says the EU is creating a two-tier justice system, rather like that in America, whereby the states continue to be responsible for petty crimes, but serious or cross-border felonies are subject to federal law. As well as European public prosecutor and an accompanying magistratory, Eurojust, there is a federal police force called Europol. And for the past decade, Europol has simply been an agency through which national police forces exchange information. Now it is being given operational authority. Meanwhile, common rules on who may enter the EU are making a nonsense of Britain's opt-out from the border-free zone. There's little point in keeping physical frontier checks when we lose the power to regulate who can pass through them. Bit by bit, our common law traditions are giving way to continental, Bonapartist jurisprudence. Now, Bonapartists, you know, Napoleon Bonaparte, that was one of the rises of the European Holy Roman Empire. And what we've got in the judiciary that is being, you know, foisted on this country is the rise of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, it'll go on for so long until somebody says, no, enough's enough. And the indication is that Britain and America will be out, they will not be part of it. But, you know, it may well give them the excuse to go and to say, right, you may not be part of it, but we're certainly going to be controlling you. And it says, it's often said that the Tories spend too much time talking about Europe. But as this demonstrates, the EU now affects virtually every aspect of public life in Britain. One would have thought that home affairs, by definition, would be the one area untouched by Brussels. Not anymore. The precondition of domestic reform is that we control our own affairs, and the Conservatives need not be embarrassed about pointing this out. So if there's a swing to the Conservative Party against what is happening, then you can see how it'll in fact, you know, Britain will pull out of Europe, and Britain can in fact pull out of Europe. The problem is, let's turn over to Hosea chapter 7, a scripture that we've read many, many times, but it's still, it's when you start seeing things like this within the newspapers that it starts to really make far, far more sense. It says, to look in verse 8, it says, Ephraim, he has mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake that's not turned. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he doesn't know it. Yes, grey hairs are here and there upon him, but he just simply doesn't know it. He doesn't recognize what's actually happening. It was, here is Ephraim, and strangers, people outside, within the EU for a start, have devoured his strength. We've let the fisheries go, we've let so much of our industry go to the EU in that regard. Not only that, but grey hairs are there here and there upon him. In other words, he's old. The actual system that he's been using for all these years is on its way out. He's about ready to finish. He's about ready to die. But he has no idea. No idea about it at all. There's another full page series of articles here. One on the same subject. It says, Britain will not veto the Euro justice policy. It says, a Home Office minister was criticised yesterday for failing to guarantee that the government would block plans to harmonise European criminal justice policy. In a Commons debate on a wide-ranging European political policy document, Caroline Flint said the government would be robust in defending British interests when EU leaders negotiated the plans. It's a load of poppycock. Every time they've been so-called robust in defending British interests, we've just simply backtracked and given more and more away. And this is, nothing's going to change in this. And she also stressed the government was opposed to some of the ideas of the EU Justice and Home Affairs work programme for the next 5 years, and so on. But, you know, he talks about women ruling over us, and this is very true. You know, they are wanting this conciliatory, this kind of coming together and all seeing everybody's sides, and they forget the history. In fact, you know, instead of rule Britannia, it's cool Britannia. In other words, it's the modern, forward-looking Britain. It's a socially multicultural Britain that they're pushing forward, which then gets rid of and severs all the ties with the past and forgets about the fact that Britain did stand alone in something like the Battle of Britain against what was happening in Europe, and forgets the history, forgets what in fact has happened in the continent, and totally, totally does not see this Holy Roman Empire that's coming together. And of course, I mean, we don't see it because at the moment it's not there. It's something that will come and it will suddenly arise. But you see these laws, one by one, being laid down, which are pointing in that direction, ultimately. It says, another one, labour agenda alarms civil rights groups. It says, galloping integration in the field of justice is very often driven by Downing Street. Number 10, touts EU justice policy as a British success because it's based on mutual recognition of the 25 different legal systems, heading off moves towards harmonisation, seen as a greater threat of the common law tradition, whatever that means. At the moment, initiatives are largely stitched up by London, Berlin, Paris, Rome and Madrid, with the British taking the lead. Britain has outstripped the French and Germans in anti-terrorism proposals, such as EU-wide laws giving police access to our telephone, fax, email and internet records. Chief resistance in this Labour-led agenda has come from Scandinavia and civil rights groups that fear the creation of powerful agencies outside democratic control. So what we're seeing in America with the this homeland security, we're seeing also in Britain, and Britain is actually pushing for it. And yet at the same time, they're giving away their sovereignty over it to Europe. So we're seeing the rise of we're seeing the potential for the rise of the beast, the potential for the rise of this Holy Roman Empire. Another article, a nothing debate or a vital issue of sovereignty. It says, Caroline Flint, the Home Office Minister in charge of European policy in the field of justice and home affairs, denounced the Tories yesterday for creating a debate out of nothing by suggesting there were plans to harmonise EU criminal asylum and immigration laws. And the proposals were subject to a rare debate on EU policy in Parliament yesterday, not at the instigation of the Tories, but of the all-party European Scrutiny Committee. Its job is to monitor EU developments and alert MPs to their implications. And, on and on it goes. But we need to be aware that things are progressing. Things are constantly going on. It's something that doesn't happen overnight. It hasn't happened as fast as the church anticipated in the past, but it is happening. And we are seeing this legislation being laid down, and we're seeing this terrorist threat being used to bring this legislation in, and we're seeing a progressive link and the handing of the judiciary across to the European control. And so we're seeing that control actually coming under what will eventually be a Holy Roman Empire. Now, at the same time, on the other side of the page, and this is again all from yesterday's paper, we're looking at another article that says Blair is ready to convert, says a Catholic priest. Now, I believe that Mr. Blair has now denied that this. He's kind of poo-pooed it. He said, oh, no, don't worry about this. He's poo-pooed it the way he would. But there are strong indications, it says here. It says a priest who regularly conducts mass for Tony Blair and his family refueled speculation yesterday that the Prime Minister intends becoming a Roman Catholic. And it talks about Friar Timothy Russ, whose parish includes Chequers, disclosed that Mr. Blair, an Anglican, had raised the question of conversion with him, and has said, if you ask me, do you think he wants to become a Catholic? And I would say yes. And the fact that he's raised the question, can somebody go ahead and bring that up over the Prime Minister if the Prime Minister hasn't actually raised the question of conversion? Why would he bring that up? Why would he say such a thing? Even if the Prime Minister has in fact denied it. That, you know, I'm afraid Mr. Blair is a politician and realises that there are a lot of votes that would go away from him if he was understood that he was about to become a Catholic. But it still doesn't belie the direction in which he seems to be going. says Downing Street also refused to be drawn, although a spokesman said that the matter was a private one. But the disclosures are fresh evidence that Mr. Blair, who is possibly the most religious holder of the post since William Gladstone, has a growing fascination with the Catholic faith. I wonder whether he's already a Catholic, personally. But you know, he cannot openly come out and say that. Yet. He says, although Britain has never had a Catholic Prime Minister, there's no constitutional bar to Mr. Blair converting while in Downing Street. However, constitutional historians have said that such a development could prove awkward and could affect the relationship between the church and state. And so they're suggesting that he waits until after he's left the post. But it is of interest, because that really does fit in with Bible prophecy. Bible prophecy shows very clearly that there's going to be a dominant Catholic influence. Now, eventually that Catholic influence will recede. It says they'll burn her with fire, and they will destroy the Catholic Church because they'll see what has actually happened. But you get a Pope working miracles, which is what seems to be prophesied, and you're looking at the glue that will bring this this Holy Roman Empire into being. But what we're watching is little cracks, little bits and pieces here and there being laid down in a preparatory way for what will come. To give you an example, just a final one now, it says the EU whistleblower in the £130 million case is fired. It says the outgoing European Commission sacked its most tenacious whistleblower yesterday in a final settling of scores, prompting furious protests from Euro MPs. Marta Andreessen, the former chief accountant, was dismissed without pay following a 28-month inquiry after she spoke out against the European Union's Enron-style bookkeeping. She basically blew the whistle, saying, look, there is money being diverted here, there and everywhere, and the bookkeeping is such that you cannot find where that money is going, and making a lot of people very, very rich. It says, guided by Neil Kinnock, the reform commissioner, Brussels imposed its harshest sanctions, even though internal EU documents have largely validated her claims. So Mr. Neil Kinnock, who used to be a British Prime Minister, who is head of this particular this reform commission, again, they have all these titles, it is corrupt. There is corruption within it, and it is going in a certain direction, and it will be used to punish Israel. But it itself will then be punished also. Turn over to Revelation 18. Revelation 18. Because you see, what this lady blew the whistle on was a means of certain people becoming very, very rich within their positions of power. And here in Revelation 18, it says in verse 8, it says, therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death, mourning, famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. And the kings of the earth that have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning standing afar off, for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, that great city, Babylon, that mighty city, for in one hour your judgment comes. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise any more, the merchandise of gold, silver, precious stones and pearls and so on. It is a trading block. It has trade at its basis. And if you go back to Ezekiel 28, you find by the multitude of your traffic, your trading, this is the way Satan operated. You're journeying, you're going around and wheedling support for yourself through human devised governmental or through the positions that you hold. It is a satanic system, and you will be used by God to correct his people and to correct his physical Israel, and also, unfortunately, some of spiritual Israel as well, who refuse to go ahead and listen to God when he speaks. And that is something we need to constantly keep in mind. This also is something that will happen. So the news is, let's say, very, very full yesterday. It may slacken off. These things do, because we're looking at birth pains. We're looking at a birth pain which then builds up and then it will slacken off, builds up and slackens off. But they certainly, looking at the paper yesterday, there are so many, and this is only certain ones that we've highlighted, but there were a lot of headlines that I think were very pertinent to us. And it's not a case of something huge immediately appearing. That will come later. But it is the steps that are necessary to put the legislation and put the pieces into place so that that can then happen. And it's that that we've got to be aware of, and we've got to remain alert to, and also we've got to handle in the right way.